Overhead Door Company, the original garage door company, serving you for over 90 years. Call 843-767-0028 or overheaddoorco.com. Overhead Door Company of Charleston, proud to open hour two of the Morrow Midday Show. This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Back again. Sadie's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? 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 Guess who's back?
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, we'll get to our picks in a little bit. Preview the weekend of NFL football, which began last night with just a horrendous performance by the Atlanta Falcons. We'll check in with somebody who covers Wake Forest to get ready for that matchup this weekend. And a whole lot more here throughout the Football Friday this afternoon. Caught up with Sam to wrap up last hour, who was out there in person yesterday. We obviously did not have a show yesterday, and I haven't mentioned it yet this afternoon, but of course want to commend Bobby for the great job done once again yesterday. Not only making it through 12 hours, and it seemed like having his voice, at least enough of it, throughout the 12 hours, but of course all the money raised for the Ronald McDonald House, as he does every year here and has done for about the past decade. So a great job. I really have no association with it other than just being part of the radio station in which, you know, it's done through. And so, you know, that's all Bobby's thing, and he does a great job. But just by simply being in the building, part of the radio station, right? Like, I feel a sense of pride. I had nothing to do with it. But just by from being a coworker of Bobby, doing something like that is great. So job well done once again and every year by Bobby. I'd tip my cap to him. But also, you know, the great thing about radio, now, other than being like a theater of the mind type of thing, is also, I think it's more like personable in that sense. And so that's the other thing. Bobby, as he says himself, right, he calls himself like the ringleader. Of course, it can't be done. The great work for the Ronald McDonald House and all the donations, right, it wouldn't be possible without the local businesses, without the local people, without you, those who donated, listeners, those who stopped by, dropped things off, or even just said hello, that supported the event. It wouldn't be possible without everyone else involved as well. And I think that's the great thing about radio, is that it's a little more intimate, right? Radio, it's a little more maybe conversational, a little more taking you into the life of whoever it is that you listen to. TV is more structured, and you watch TV, and even if it's local TV, you don't get that peel back the curtain type of deal. You may not feel like you know the people personally through the TV screen as one through a radio. And also TV, you know, like the local TV, you would talk about probably the local news. Well, for one, a lot of it's the bad stuff. But, you know, you watch it maybe when you get home from work or before you go to bed at night. Where radio, most people listen in the car. You're driving to work. You're driving home from work. You're going to lunch. You're listening to the radio. So in this case, you know, like say me or Bobby or Scott, or whoever it is that you listen to, they're with you maybe on a long drive. Or you're listening as you go to work or while you work or all day. Maybe you have our station on. If you do, we love you, right? All day while you work, you're a driver, you're making deliveries, you're in the car from 9 to 5, you're listening. And point being that station, that show, that person you listen to is with you your entire work week. Maybe all 8 hours of the day, all 40 hours. As you work, that's the voice, that's the soundtrack. That's what I always loved about like listening to baseball games, right? They're the soundtrack of your summer. As you were a kid growing up, thinking back to those summer highlights and running outside, and you know, you'd be listening to maybe the baseball game, and that voice, that singular voice that you heard all summer long. It's a little more personable and a little more, you just have a different relationship, I always thought. Maybe this is just because I work in radio, but I always felt with the person on radio than, say, TV. You just feel like you have more of a connection. And in the case of radio, of course, you could also call in. You can text the show nowadays. You can email us. You can even just, people stop by the radio station. You meet listeners. Where TV, I just think there's more of like a, it's a little more formal, more of a barrier. So I say all that because I think yesterday also shows one of the great things about radio is to be able to do an event like that and to be on the radio for 12 hours and to get all the contributions and the people chipping in and And the fact that so many listeners and companies and partners and sponsors want to get involved and they feel that connection to the Ronald McDonald House and willing to help, I think all of it is excellent. So, all that's to say, job well done by everybody involved yesterday. Obviously, Bobby, for leading the whole thing and being on air for 12 hours. The support staff over there at the Ronald McDonald House that he works with. All of the listeners, the companies, the sponsors, all of the contributors yesterday. Job well done by everybody involved. That's an excellent event that Bobby leads every year, especially for this time of year. All I did was stop by. I just tried to give him a slushie, you know, to help soothe the throat after talking for 10 hours. I had nothing to do with it. And yet, just by simply being in the building, right, you feel like a sense of pride because of something special is being done. So props to Bobby and everybody involved yesterday for a job very well done. And on top of it all, as Sam mentioned, I got to meet Sam in person yesterday. So that was great. Got the mailman to deliver him. Special delivery right to the Ronald McDonald House. And he didn't even have to ask, because I don't think I would be bold enough to ask the mailman for a ride. If I had to walk somewhere and the mailman's there, I don't think I'm bold enough to go up to said mailman and say, hey, can you bring me over here? But see, Sam didn't do that. He's a big enough star. The mailman said, hey, Sam, we got to get you to the Ronald McDonald House. Special delivery. We got to overnight you. And they got him there in a hurry to get on the air with Bobby. And fortunately, I was there at the time to meet him, which was great. But all around a great event yesterday. Then I get home last night after the Citadel's drubbing of Carver Bible College and turned on that Thursday night football game last night. And you go from great feelings and a great event all day long and something special to whatever that was last night on Thursday night football from the Falcons that was just horrendous. Now for the Patriots, New England, for their defense, they've been excellent. They've now won 5 in a row. They're 7-4. They're percentage points behind the Bills. They have an extra win but an extra loss as well. The Patriots are percentage points behind Buffalo. When you look at the AFC, who do you trust the most in that AFC conference right now? Right? Do you like the Ravens the most? What about the Titans? They're 8-2. They've beaten some good teams, but there's just something about Tennessee. You watch them, you think, like, I don't know if this is the best team in the league. The Chiefs could be, but they haven't played well this year. There's not a lot of great options to choose from that you would feel confident in the AFC, but New England's there. 5 straight wins. Defense has been excellent. They've been really dominating some teams. They're undefeated on the road, which is hard to do. And they have a +123 point differential, which, of course, is a stat I reference frequently. That's the second best in the league. Based off of simply point differential, the Patriots have played as the second best team in the league this year. And if you go back and you look, it compares very well to where the Patriots were at this point in terms of point differential, the years they've won the Super Bowl. This is a good Patriots team. Did they beat up on a bad Falcons team last night? Yes. But it's a really good defense, and this looks like a classic Bill Belichick squad. Started a little slow. They were 2-4. Teams always get better as they go on. His winning percentage increases every month. In fact, Belichick in his career isn't much over 50% in September. He usually plays .500 football in September, kind of what he did this year. October, he gets a little bit better. He's up into like the low 60s. By the time you get towards Halloween, he wins about 70% of his games the rest of the season. And that's exactly the script that New England is following this year. The defense is good. The run game has gotten going. They're physical. They got 3 different guys to hand it off to. All right, last night they were just, they weren't crisp offensively at all times. They're not the most exciting offense, but you watch them play that game against Atlanta. I mean, they were clearly the better team. They were more physical. They dominated in the trenches. Their defense was really good. 4 interceptions on 4 consecutive possessions. That was embarrassing for the Falcons. This Patriots team is certainly one to watch out for in the AFC. And you go back and you look, different eras. It was 20 years ago. Teams didn't throw as much. But you go back and you look at Mac Jones at this point, the 11 first starts of his career, which, by the way, are as a rookie. Tom Brady did not start as a rookie. But if you go back to Brady's first 11 starts and compare the two, very similar. Brady had 8 wins, Mac Jones 7. Completion percentage, Mac Jones is actually higher. He's completing over 70% of his passes as a rookie. Touchdowns to interceptions, almost identical. Passing yards per game, more for Mac Jones. And it's a different era, but we talk about Mac Jones being this game manager and he doesn't have to do a whole lot. Well, Tom Brady did even less early on in his career as he won a bunch of games in a Super Bowl. And I know 20 years ago, things have changed. But Mac Jones also has a higher passer rating, 95-92 for the first 11 starts. I'm not telling you, Mac Jones is going to be the next Tom Brady. But what I am saying is that Bill Belichick has won with less at that quarterback position. Mac Jones has been better in his first 11 starts than Tom Brady was in his first 11, and yet they won a Super Bowl against the greatest show on turf with Tom Brady. Could this Patriots team, would you really be surprised if they won a Super Bowl with this defense, that run game, and the way Mac Jones is playing? Of course not. This is one of the better teams. They're becoming one of the better teams in the AFC, and therefore, really one of the better teams in the league. And Bill Belichick just continues to do a great job. That defense was smothering last night. They beat the Falcons 25-0 last night. They dominated the Browns last week. They've outscored opponents 60-7 the last 2 weeks, winning five in a row. Which takes us to the Falcons side. That was just embarrassing for Atlanta last night. You're at home. Yeah, short week, but you're at home on a short week. You get the Patriots coming to your building, and you get embarrassed back-to-back weeks. I always love to bet on teams that get embarrassed the next week because usually NFL teams don't get blown out twice consecutive. There's too much pride. There's too much talent. They just had an off day the week before. You think, they'll bounce back. They looked terrible against the Cowboys. They didn't look a whole lot better last night. And after winning 4 out of 6 and getting to 500 and having some good feelings, the Falcons down the last 2 weeks have been outscored, just like the Patriots, to their opponents. The Falcons have been on the other side of it, where Atlanta, they've been outscored something along the same lines of same thing. What is it, 68-3? Incredibly bad. Not often do you see a team get beat up that badly back-to-back weeks. And as they won 4 out of 6 and got back to 500 and beat the Saints on the road, I said, we will know about this team in the next 10 days. You get the Cowboys on the road, you get the Patriots on a short week. Let's see how legitimate this team is. And what do you know? Not only did they lose the two games, but they lost them in embarrassing fashion, getting outscored 68-3. Matt Ryan is clearly not the answer. The Falcons clearly don't have enough talent on offense. Their two first-round picks, although Cordarrelle Patterson was not drafted by them, but the two first-round picks they have at the skill position, both unavailable, Calvin Ridley and Cordarrelle. You did have Kyle Pitts, a different first-round pick, but two others you're missing. And you look at that receiving core, and Kyle Pitts, if you count him as a tight end like he is, the receivers are something like a fifth-round draft pick, a sixth-round draft pick, two undrafted guys. The running back is Allison, a guy you've never heard of before. Right? There's just not much talent there on offense without Calvin Ridley. And now, without Cordarrelle Patterson, with the important part he's played this year. To the point where 4 consecutive interceptions from the Falcons and from 3 different quarterbacks even? First time that's happened in 21 years for any team in the NFL. First time the Falcons were shut out at home in over 30 years. That was an embarrassing loss last night. That was terrible. The defense hung in there for about a half a game, maybe 3 quarters. Defense played tough. And for the offense, couldn't score a single point. But I thought what really summarized the game well was that sequence in the second quarter. And I hate to do it because it may be low-hanging fruit and also because there's so much scar tissue built up, but wasn't it kind of reminiscent of the Super Bowl matchup a few years back? Of course, different scenario here. Neither team is as good as they were there. Much lower stakes, a random Thursday night game instead of the Super Bowl. It was only the second quarter instead of the fourth quarter. But when the Falcons had a chance to get into the game instead of put the game away, down, what was it, 10-0, second quarter, in field goal range, a 3rd and 1, they decide to pass. Matt Ryan takes like a 30-yard sack. Didn't you kind of think, did you have flashbacks of that Super Bowl a few years ago when the Falcons were in field goal range? Could have just run the football, instead tried to throw. Matt Ryan got sacked. Now you're talking about maybe a field goal. And in this case last night, when you're thinking of a field goal and the field goal was initially made, then here's a silly penalty on a field goal. Back him up 5 yards. Okay, now it's a 50-yarder for Koo, and this time he missed. And at that point, it was like, all right, that's the game. That was the chance. And on 3rd and 1, you take a 30-yard sack. On a made field goal, you have a penalty. Then you miss the field goal. You're still scoreless. The Patriots go down and score. It's 13-0. It's like, all right, this game's over. Falcons don't stand a chance. And that was an embarrassing effort for them last night. And I thought it was great from Troy Aikman at the end of the game when they showed Arthur Smith's expression after the 4th interception. And he said, like, I don't think I've ever seen an expression capture the moment so perfectly. Something along those lines, I'm paraphrasing. But he was right on. And that was a tough night for Atlanta, which is turning into a bit of a tough season here for him. And that 4-4 run was fun. Or when they won 4 out of 6 to get to 500, that was a lot of fun. But this may be more like the Falcons team. And instead of pointing fingers and saying, like, oh, Arthur Smith's a bad hire, he doesn't know what he's doing, I would actually go in the opposite direction. I actually think Arthur Smith deserves credit just for simply getting this team to 500. The fact that they were 4-4, beat the Saints, won 4 out of 6 games, because when you watch them, there's really not much there. Now, there's really not a whole lot on this team. You got Kyle Pitts and Matt Ryan. And Matt Ryan is washed up. And you know, when you go up against Bill Belichick and there's no Calvin Ridley and nobody else to account for, you knew he was going to take away Kyle Pitts. Who else can step up? Problem is, they have nobody on that offense. They're handing it off to Quadri Allison and throwing to, you know, Russell Gage as the leading receiver. It's not going to get you far. Kyle Pitts had three catches last night. He had, like, just one in the first half when the game actually mattered. There's just not much here for Atlanta. And I go back to the draft and the opportunity to get that potential franchise-changing quarterback instead of sticking with Matt Ryan and having to bench him back-to-back weeks because the offense is so poor and the team's getting blown out so much. And that was the case here over the past, I don't know, whatever, it's been 5 days alone. They've been outscored 68-3. Horrendous. We'll further preview this weekend of the NFL season coming up. I'll also give you my picks in a little bit as well. And also, the fans have had a big impact this year in football, returning to the stands, to the stadiums, but maybe not for the reason you would think. Get to that coming up as well. The More Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Yo, what up?
What's the word, big fella? Everything's good on this end.
Hey, Luke, how's it going? Thanks for having me on the show.
Hey, Luke. Hey, man. Pleasure to be on your show.
I'm doing great, but I'm hoping you could call me Boca Baby.
Great show. You did a good job.
You're turning into rapidly my favorite person I've interviewed with, and I've done like 50 of these in the last week.
You've done your homework. I like it. I absolutely like it. I love that.
Another great thought.
You've done your homework, haven't you? Good job.
You've always get these big stars and important people on. That's great to hear. We like to hear the interviews.
You know, it's uncanny how you do this, Luke. And I don't know how you do, because I do this gauntlet of radio on Thursdays, where I do all these different cities. Many of them need their hosts to have me give them some talking points. You hit all my talking points every week. It's uncanny how good you are.
Always great talking football with you, Luke. Appreciate you guys being right.
Very impressive.
Shout out to all the people in Tulsa that support the show.
Tell your friends. Tell your friends.
Da-da-da-da-da. Da-da-da-da. Go ahead, boy. That's why you bring it on.
Is this a sports show or a dancing show?
I don't know. Sometimes I don't know what we're doing around here.
Lunch with Luke for 3 hours, anything goes.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
What is love? Baby, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me. No more.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. We'll break down Wake Forest coming up in about 10 minutes and preview their game with Clemson tomorrow with our opponent's scouting report, as we do every Friday here on the Morrow Midday Show. Great song from the 90s, if I do say so myself, from the great movie Night of the Roxbury. There's a Netflix has a really good, like, documentary series, The Movies That Made Us, and they break down some of the big movies over the years and tell you all the behind-the-scenes stuff about how it came to be and how this actor wound up with that role and, you know, all the interesting stuff about making these films. I happened to just watch one late one night in the last couple of weeks on Elf, the Christmas movie with Will Ferrell, which, by the way, was originally written for Chris Farley. He was going to be Elf. But anyways, they talked about that in the documentary, that this was really Will Ferrell's first, like, leading role. He had just done Old School, where he was a supporting actor, and then Anchorman didn't come out yet. Elf was right before, which is always hard to believe that movie is that old, that Elf came out before all that other stuff when Will Ferrell really took off. But in the documentary, they're talking about how it was hard to sell the studio on Will Ferrell because they pointed to Night at the Roxbury and said, like, this is the only time we've really seen him in a big role, and it wasn't very good. And I thought, what are you talking about? I love Night of the Roxbury. Great movie. But it was hard for them to get Will Ferrell in that role of Elf. And then, you know, as they say, the rest is history. Of course, it's become one of the most successful Christmas movies.
What's not to like about the Butabi brothers?
That's right. Love that movie. Great movie. In fact, I watched that not too long ago. It was probably over the summer. But it's on one of those streaming services. Of course, I threw it on. Love Night of the Roxbury. But that's a good documentary series on Netflix, and I think they even did a bunch about the horror films this past Halloween. They came out with a bunch of them, so I got to watch those. But this Christmas season, we're getting to the time where, you know, Elf's going to be on TV all the time, and you'll be watching that very movie with Will Ferrell. Let's talk about food for a moment, because on the text line, somebody had asked about Antonio Brown. Did you hear this story about the potentially he forged his vaccination card? This is what's interesting to me, is that the story gets out because his personal chef, we've heard stories before about Antonio Brown and the people in his life and him not taking care of them. And so in this case, the personal chef kind of turned on him. He apparently is owed $10,000. Maybe it's $100,000. Because $10,000, I mean, that is a good amount of money. But it may be, I think it's $10,000. He's owed by Antonio Brown. Anyways, he hasn't gotten the money from Brown, so he said, fine, you want to stiff me, I'm going to expose you. And so he has these text messages, and who knows, you can, you know, fake text messages nowadays. You could just change the contact in your phone. So this is going to have to be proven that it comes from that phone number, and that phone number is this person. But apparently he has text messages from Antonio Brown's girlfriend asking if he could get them fake vaccination cards. Now, I don't know why you would go to your personal chef for something like that, but that was the plan for Antonio Brown. Now, the whole thing about this, as I understand it, I don't think this is something that would lead to a suspension. I think it would just be a fine. You know, Aaron Rodgers is another one who's kind of circumvented the protocols and just got fined. I think it'd be the same thing for Antonio Brown. As I always say, I don't care if you're vaccinated or not. You know, just don't lie. And this is another case in which you have a player lying about it to try to, you know, skirt the rules. And for Antonio Brown, of course, we know all the stories in the past, and it seemed like he was on the straight and narrow lately in Tampa Bay, and this would just be the latest example of him doing something stupid and getting himself in trouble, in this case, with the league. But forget all that, because what I'm most interested about is the fact that this all deals with his personal chef. And I've thought about this before. If you had, let's say, you know, unlimited funds, you're a millionaire, what would be the biggest luxury that you would, like, look forward to? Because I do think it could be a personal chef. Many people would probably say maybe, like, a private plane. Maybe you want a bunch of cars. That's great. I'll settle for just, like, one nice car, right? If I'm a millionaire, if money's not a concern, what would be that one thing you would want most? I think a personal chef is pretty legit. Now, I've always wondered, do they live with you? Because what if I want something, you know, at, like, 1 a.m.? I want an omelet. Is the guy in the house? And I could text him, I could page him. Maybe he's watching TV with me. I say, hey, buddy, why don't you go make me an omelet? How does that work? Are they in the house 24/7? Do they have their own guest room? Do they have a guest house? Are they part of the house? Are they only there certain hours during the day? I got a lot of questions about the whole personal chef. But forget the private plane, because I don't like the idea of these small planes. I have no problem. I don't have a fear of flying. But whenever you hear the horror stories, the bad things going wrong, it's usually like these smaller planes. So I want to stay off of those. I got no problem flying. If anything, if I was a millionaire or a billionaire, I'll charter the plane and I'll go on a normal, you know, big aircraft with the whole crew and everything. And even other people can come on the plane if they want. I just will get to skip security and drive right. I mean, you know, fortunately in my career, I've been on chartered flights before, and that's enough for me because that's easy. You just drive right up to the plane. You get on the plane. You get off the plane. Get right into your car on the runway. You don't have to worry about security. You don't have to worry about waiting, you know, getting to the gate 2 hours early. I don't need a private plane. I'll charter flights. But I think the personal chef is top-notch. A couple of different reasons. Number one, I'm not a cook. So it'd be great to have somebody in the house that could cook so that I don't have to waste my time trying to figure it out. Number two, also helps you just, you know, like with your diet. Make sure you're eating well, because I can be very undisciplined and guilty of having things maybe I shouldn't. But when you have that personal chef and they're making those great meals, it's like eating out, you know, every night. You got a legitimate chef in the house. You may have a mother, a wife, a husband, somebody who's a really good cook, but are they good enough to be cooking, you know, like in an actual restaurant? Because I'm sure the personal chef would be. Unfortunately here for Antonio Brown, he took that personal chef for granted, didn't want to pay him, and now the chef's turning his back on AB, apparently releasing this story to try to get him in trouble. I don't know if he's going to see that money now after this stunt. But I think that personal chef, I think that's number one. If I ever had, you know, money where I didn't have to worry about it, I think I'm going personal chef number one. And that's really all I need. Sure, you know, a nice house, maybe a nice car, whatever. Like, I don't know if I need a boat. I don't need a private plane. But I would love a personal chef. Anytime you want anything, hey, whip me up this. 3 a.m, you got a craving for something. The personal chef, he's in the guest house. You text him, hey, get up, buddy. You got to go make me this. I'm in the mood. And speaking of food, did you see Matt Stafford's wife threw a pretzel at a 49ers fan this past week when on Monday Night Football? Now, here's what's interesting about this. If it was roles reversed, don't you think something would happen with that fan? They'd probably be banned. Right? Remember when, and it's a little bit different because it's a player, not another fan, but we've had fans throw things towards the court and they get banned. Shouldn't it be the same for family members? Patrick Mahomes' brother, earlier this year, I forget the team they were facing, you know, he dumped water, he was in the suite, and you have the fans below you, and I'm sure they're saying some terrible things about, you know, your brother, Patrick Mahomes and everything, they're talking trash, but as a family member, you got to take the high road, as hard as it may be, you got to have some restraint. And he dumped water on the fans earlier this year, Patrick Mahomes' brother did. Now you have Matt Stafford, his wife, throwing a pretzel at a fan. Not a good look. And I think if it was a role reversed and a fan threw a pretzel at Matt Stafford's wife, I don't think he's going to another game again. I don't think he's allowed in that stadium. So, shouldn't we kind of hold family members to the same standard? Shouldn't Matt Stafford's wife be banned from that stadium as well for throwing a pretzel? Now, the pretzel's an interesting choice. But I think you get a good grip on a pretzel. Right? What are you buying at the concession stand? Chicken fingers would be pretty easy to throw. Maybe I'd throw a chicken finger at somebody. A hot dog, those things can be a little slippery. And if you hit somebody with a hot dog, they're kind of rubbery. Right? Like, I don't know. It's got to be a really overcooked hot dog. If you hit somebody in the face with a hot dog from a distance, that could be pretty good. But otherwise, you know, if they got their back turned to you, throw a hot dog and it hits, I don't know if they even notice. You throw a pretzel, if that's a big size pretzel, if you get one of those big pretzels, and if it's a little overdone, you could get some hard pretzels. You ever go to any sporting event? Basketball game, football game, and the pretzel is like the last one in there, and it's spinning in there, and you think, I'll get the hard pretzel. And it's, you know, it's been in there for a while, it's overcooked, and you're going to break a tooth biting into it. You throw one of those, you can knock somebody out with some of these pretzels I've seen in certain arenas. So the pretzel's not a bad choice by Matt Stafford's wife, especially if it's a big, you know, if it's a good-sized one. If it was in the cooker a little too long, it's a little overcooked. You could get a good grip on it. You could grab a pretzel pretty good at the corner instead of trying to throw a slippery hot dog. Or what, you're going to throw like a cheeseburger? That's just going to come apart when you throw it in air. The pretzel's a pretty good option. But at the same time, I do have to point out the double standard. That if somebody threw a pretzel at Matt Stafford's wife, right, they would be vilified and probably never allowed at a football game again. Matt Stafford's wife throws a pretzel at a fan, and again, I'm sure they're saying terrible things. But you throw a pretzel at a fan, it's like, oh, that's just Matt Stafford's silly wife throwing pretzels around. Oh, so humorous. If it was a role reversal, I'm sure she would be asking for that person, you know, to be kicked out and never come back again. Patrick Mahomes' brother dumps water on fans. If somebody did that to the Mahomes family, I don't think they're coming back into a game. Anyways, let's hold the family members to the same standard. Stop throwing food at these games. Eat the pretzel instead. I love a good pretzel. We'll check in with somebody who covers Wake Forest when we come back. Get ready for that game against Clemson tomorrow. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
What kind of food?
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Getting ready for the games over the weekend on a football Friday. And every Friday we always catch up with somebody from the other side of the matchup to get that opponent's scouting report so you can know what to expect for kickoff tomorrow. And joining us now to preview Wake Forest and Clemson tomorrow is Connor O'Neill from Deacons Illustrated on Twitter at @ConnorO'Neill_DI, and he's with us now. Connor, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm good, Luke. How are you? I was just kind of vibing out to the intro music there.
Yes. Yeah, I'm glad you appreciate the walk-up song. Not bad on a Friday afternoon. I appreciate you joining us as well. Let's talk about this one tomorrow for Clemson and Wake Forest. For Wake Forest, obviously going to try to win the ACC this year, and tomorrow they come to Clemson, where it's not the same Clemson team of years past, but of course a big opportunity here for Wake. So just from the Wake Forest side of things, you know, how is this game viewed? Of course, just what's on the line, but also the fact that in order to accomplish that, you have to beat Clemson on the road. And while it's maybe not the same Clemson team, it's kind of like slaying a dragon here in this season. How's Wake Forest view this particular matchup against Clemson on the road here tomorrow?
Yeah, I mean, not to go too WWE on you, but you kind of get the feeling that in order to be the man, you got to beat the man, and the man is still Clemson. As long as Clemson has a chance to win the ACC Atlantic, then Clemson is still the team to beat. There is a scenario where Wake loses this week and still wins next weekend at Boston College and goes to Charlotte at 7-1 in the Atlantic. NC State and Clemson would both have two losses, but I think that's kind of the scenario that, you know, it exists, but it's not in Wake's mind right now. They've been pretty goal-oriented and focused on the one game at a time mantra that they set for themselves. So, yeah, I mean, this is the big one. This is the one that you get this one and you can celebrate winning the division.
Yeah, certainly. You know, go back to the beginning of the season or the offseason and your thoughts or expectations. Have you been surprised at all in how successful Wake Forest has been this year, or did you kind of see this coming heading into the season?
You know, I've kind of got to eat a little bit of crow here, and I realize that's kind of tiptoeing up to it. I thought this team had a chance to be really good. I thought they had a lot of pieces where they didn't have a lot of question marks. But the question marks I had, in terms of personnel, they didn't have question marks. The question marks I had were about whether they would do things differently than years past, because years past, they've started well before. I mean, they were 7-1 two years ago and just kind of stumbled down the stretch and went 1-4 to close that season. And depth is always an issue for Wake Forest. And we've seen this. I needed to see them play more guys in the first few games. I needed to see them kind of rotate some more defensive backs and more linebackers and more receivers into games. And I wasn't sure if we would see those things, and they answered them. They did those things, and that's where it's paying off now. I mean, they're banged up like every team in the country. I know Clemson kind of might be more banged up than every other team, but they – even though Wake is banged up, they've still got guys that, you know, they played against Florida State. They played against Duke. They played against Virginia even for the last, like, 6 minutes of that game. So they've got guys that are experienced, and they've built some depth over the year.
Maybe it's that aspect, but what has surprised you most or impressed you most about this team? You know, Hartman's played really well. Obviously, the offense has been excellent. When you look back at this season so far, maybe it's that depth you mentioned, but what has stood out most about how they've gotten to this point or how they have played this year?
It is depth. I think the depth also walks hand in hand with, you know, their mantra this year has been going from good to great. They've been to a bowl game the last five seasons, and this will be six. But none of those seasons have really been a great season. Like, they've all topped out around eight wins, and some have been seven-win seasons. Like, you had last year's weird COVID season. I think that the one thing I said going into the season was for them to go from good to great, Sam Hartman would have to go from being a good college quarterback to a great college quarterback. And I think it's undeniable that that's what you've seen from him this year. And he's got 39 touchdowns, 30 through the air and 9 on the ground. He's thrown for over 3,000 yards. It's just the progression of being a fourth-year guy who, you know, he can take hits. He put on a bunch of weight from his freshman year 3 years ago. He was playing at about 175 pounds. He looked like a toothpick running around out there. And I remember he started the game where Clemson won 63-3. And I remember just thinking, man, the first hit that he takes from any one of those defensive linemen on that team, Wilkins, Lawrence, Farrell, I can't remember the other end's name, the one that wasn't a first rounder. Any of those guys would have just snapped him in half, right? And now he's a legitimate, like, 210-pound Power 5 ACC quarterback who's on all these national awards finalist lists. So that's been really impressive to see, and it's maybe not as surprising as it's just kind of it's opened the door for them to have this truly magical season.
Talking with Connor O'Neill, who covers Wake Forest for the Deacons Illustrated. What I find really interesting about the game tomorrow is that Wake Forest, kind of as you just touched on there, I mean, Hartman's been really good. The offense has been really good. They've scored at least 35 points in all games this year. On the flip side, for Clemson, the offense for them has been the opposite, and they have yet to exceed 30 points against an FBS team this year. So for tomorrow's game, what do you think has the greater chance of changing? Wake Forest in terms of their season low number of points, or Clemson in terms of their season high number of points? What has the greater chance of changing in tomorrow's game for this matchup?
Man, that's a tough one. I wasn't expecting to be stumped like this. Maybe this is coming from too much of admiration that I have for Brent Venables, but I think Wake's defense does not get to 35 points tomorrow. I've seen too many times that Wake feels good about an offense and goes into this game against Clemson, and it's just like, oh my gosh, they can't complete a deep ball. They can't get anything going on the ground. Every time whoever the quarterback is drops back, he's immediately pressured once he hits his back foot on a drop. It's just Brent Venables has won every chess match against Wake Forest since he got to Clemson. And it's really hard to see that changing, even with how incredible Wake's offense has been this year.
Where has that offense maybe been vulnerable? Like, if there is a weakness, if there was a concern where going into a game you think this could lead to their downfall offensively, has there been an area offensively for Wake Forest this year that, even though they've been playing great and they've been winning a bunch of games, you look at that one area and think, like, yeah, they're kind of just getting by there? Is there one spot that stands out on that offense?
Honestly, not really, but that could change tomorrow around, I don't know, Wake comes out for their last round of warm-ups about an hour before the game, and based on what I've heard, I'm not going to give any specific names, but I think they're going to be pretty shorthanded in some spaces and in some positions that they haven't been shorthanded this season. So that's something that it goes back to depth. It goes back to trusting the young guys that you've kind of groomed and been telling, hey, you're one play away. Well, you know, that one play just happened last week in a really physical game against NC State. And now, hey, guess what? You're gonna be playing a larger role in front of 80,000 people in a mid-November game with championship implications. Good luck.
Right.
So yeah, I would keep an eye out for what Wake Forest looks like in warmups about an hour before game time tomorrow.
Without getting into specifics, are you saying there may be some rumors of like COVID things with the program right now, or is it injury related?
No COVID, okay. just injuries, just guys banged up.
I got you.
You know, being the 11th game of the year,
right.
It's going to be a little bit more shorthanded of a team than I think Wake has had all year.
Hey, football in 2021, when you hear things like that, you wonder, is it football related? Is it COVID? What's going on? Talking with Connor O'Neill about Wake Forest. What about Dave Clawson? I like Dave going back to his days in the MAC. He's done a good job at Wake Forest, now taking this big step forward. Do you think he hangs around, or are we seriously looking at, you know, potentially, obviously his name's mentioned for Virginia Tech, which is elsewhere in that conference. Do you think somebody else will come along and pluck away Clawson, or do you think he's here to stay with Wake Forest right now?
I think he's here to stay as long as he continues to get the support that he's gotten, and as long as it continues to elevate and doesn't plateau. It's going to be really important that he's able to get staff raises. And it's not all about his salary. I think it's about keeping some continuity on the staff, because we talk about how good the offense is. You look at the offensive coaching staff. Every coach on the offensive staff, other than the tight ends coach, who's also the special teams coach, has been there for as long as Dave has been there, for 8 seasons. And when you can build that kind of continuity and trust, you're going to be able to solidify some things within a football program, as long as they're the right people. And I think, as we've seen this year, they are the right people. So I think Dave will stick around. I've got a few different sources that he's told he would be I don't want to phrase this as like he'd be willing to retire, because that makes it sound like he's reluctant to do it. But, you know, I think that there is a likelihood he retires at Wake Forest. I also always add the caveat of, like, you never know how somebody's going to react when, you know, your AD calls you and says, hey, this school wants to double your salary and give you a budget that's three times bigger than what you have right now. You can't predict how somebody is going to react in that situation. If somebody came to me and told me they were going to double my salary, then maybe I know how I would react, but I can't speak to how anybody else would react to that kind of thing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's easy to say now until, you know, there's money on the table, and then it becomes a much tougher decision to have to make things change. In regards to the game tomorrow, like, I'm surprised that Clemson, I'm probably surprised that they're even favored to begin with, but then favored by 4.5. I know they're the home team, but going up against number 10, Wake Forest, in your analysis earlier of this offense, it sounds a little bit like, you know, once bitten, twice shy in this matchup against Clemson, seeing what may come down the pipe against a team like this. So for the game itself, I would ask you, what do you expect tomorrow? Wake Forest is a dog against Clemson, even though they've had the better season. Do you think they can get over that hump, go to Clemson, and win this game tomorrow?
I think they can. I think, you know, so much is going to be predicated on can Wake's offense continue to play at the level they've played. Just aside from the injuries that I mentioned earlier, the possibility of them, their offense was not that great against NC State last week. That NC State defense was a top 10 scoring defense in the country, and Wake scored 45 on them. Sam Hartman completed 20 of 47 passes. He threw three interceptions, and the last interception was just a phenomenal play by two defensive backs. But the first two interceptions were two of the worst passes he's thrown all year. And so you look at all these things that added up, and they still scored 45 points against a really good defense. I'm not saying they're going to come out and drop another 40-burger tomorrow against Clemson. Like, I just hold Brent Venables in too high regard to think that that's going to happen. But I think that a lot of this is going to depend on how well Wake's offense can play. And with Wake's defense, I mean, this is we haven't really touched on it. It's just kind of hold on for dear life. I guess that's going to be the story with Wake's defense against Clemson's offense, with both of those units just trying to piecemeal together anything they can to have some semblance of efficiency and good play.
Yep, certainly. We'll see what happens tomorrow. Wake Forest and Clemson, certainly a very intriguing matchup. Clemson favored at home. He's Connor O'Neill. Follow him on Twitter at @ConnorO'Neill_DI as he's part of the Deacons Illustrated. Read his work there. Get ready for that game tomorrow. Get ready for the stretch run here for Wake Forest trying to go win the ACC if they can get past Clemson tomorrow as well. Connor, appreciate the time and the insight as always, and enjoy the game tomorrow.
Thanks, Luke. I appreciate it.
Hey, pleasure's all ours. Connor O'Neill breaking down Wake Forest for this game tomorrow with Clemson. And like he said, right, to be the man, you got to beat the man. For Wake Forest, you're trying to go win the ACC, do something you haven't done in a decade and a half, and here you are, perfect opportunity, even though you're on the road and you're an underdog. Clemson's not the same Clemson. It's the same thing I said about Pittsburgh, right? Pittsburgh, you want to go win this conference, well, you got Clemson coming to your building. Show us that you can beat this team first. You can slay those dragons. You always have to slay some dragons before you can get to the princess. That's what Pittsburgh had to do. That's what Wake Forest is going to try to do tomorrow. You know, earlier this week, I talked about, going back to Monday, speaking of Pittsburgh, I talked about experienced quarterbacks. If you go back to last Thursday, it was Pittsburgh-UNC on Thursday night in college football, and I thought one of the better matchups for quarterbacks because you had Hartman and you had Pickett, and both experienced guys. Pickett, you know, has made over, by the time he leaves college, he'll have made over 50 starts in college football. He's going to be 24 years old when he's a rookie next year in the NFL. I like experience. Go back and look at the quarterbacks that have immediate success. They're the ones that hung around their programs for a while. Mac Jones was there all 4 years. Right? Justin Herbert there all 4 years. Joe Burrow was a five-year guy. And so for Wake Forest, what's interesting is they've had great success in odd years at the quarterbacks, odd-numbered years. But also, you dig a little deeper, you see, well, they're all fourth-year guys. You know, you go back to John Walford in 2017 for Wake Forest. Started a playoff game with the Rams last year. Jamie Newman, then in 2019, took over in 2018, but it was 2019 when he had the big breakout year, his fourth season. Had over 30 touchdowns, over 3,400 yards. And now this year, Sam Hartman, who I know played some of his high school ball here in the area, has been excellent for Wake Forest. 39 touchdowns this year, put up better numbers than Jamie Newman. And people point to like all these odd years, 2017, 2019, 2021. But what it really is it's three quarterbacks now in their fourth year in the program. And that experience is huge. You're familiar with the coach, the playbook, even just the stadium, the way they operate, the school, right? You're not transferring around, learning a new school, finding friends, everything else that a college kid goes through. By the fourth year, it's just like you at your job. When you start off, right, things may still be a little odd. You're learning the staff, your coworkers. You're learning just where's the coffee, right? How things work. Can I leave before 5? Will people get upset? How do the meetings operate? By the time you're there for a couple of years, you're very comfortable in your role, and you're probably more efficient and effective at your job than when you first started. That experience is huge for these quarterbacks. And for Wake Forest, they've really benefited from it. So I look at a Kenny Pickett, even a Sam Hartman, Sam Howell, who's been a little underwhelming this year, but you can see those abilities there. Right? These are experienced quarterbacks who have been in these systems for 4 years. Of course, they're going to be playing well. And that also helps in the transition to the NFL. We'll wrap up hour two when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Wrapping up hour two here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. Appreciate the time from Connor O'Neill last segment from Deacon's Illustrated previewing Clemson and Wake Forest. What's going to give, if anything? Maybe we're heading towards a blowout in favor of Wake Forest. But Wake Forest has never scored fewer than 35 points this year. Clemson has not scored more than 30 against a Power 5 school. What has the greater chance of changing? Will Clemson's defense be able to hold Wake Forest down enough? Or will Wake Forest's defense not be able to hold down Clemson enough? It may take one of those performances. It's either going to take like a season-worst performance from Wake Forest offensively or a season-best performance from Clemson, one or the other, for Clemson to win this game. And yet they're favored by about 4.5. That number's gone up. Favored by 4.5 at home. I don't know. I know that Clemson's been, you know, they have this winning streak at home. They've been the top dog in that conference. I'm surprised by that number. I give you my official picks next hour. Plus, we preview week 10 of the NFL season. Or is this week 11 now? I can't even keep track anymore. Is it week 12? I don't even know. Whatever week it is, we'll preview it coming up for the NFL. I think it's week 11. And a whole lot more, including confusing words. Hour 3 next. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.